ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the poly speak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
So we have some fresh data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, which shows employment rising in May. But when we look at the numbers closely, what story do they show about the state of employment in Australia? And how do they relate to the bigger economic picture in light of yesterday's CPI data? And while some Aussies are starting jobs, another media shakeup appears to be brewing, with reports that Today's Show host Karl Stefanovic might be about to leave Channel 9. Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Carrington Clark.
And I'm ABC finance journalist and host of The Business on Thursdays, Alicia Barry.
G'day, Alicia. Thanks for joining. It's never particularly nice to talk about other media people potentially leaving their employment, although it's unclear at the moment whether or not Karl Stefanovic might be leaving of his own volition or whether or not he is going to be forced out. I mean, let's take a step back. We've been following closely the saga about what was happening at KISS with Kyle Sandilands and Jackie O. The dispute, Kyle eventually did a deal where he was paid out some of his contract, but also is now in a partnership with ARN when it comes to a new media product, which is sounding a lot like a podcast. What are the similarities and differences, you think, with the Karl Stefanovic situation? He was given the opportunity by Nine to go outside their media organization to do his own thing, which was a podcast, but also videoed. He's gone down an increasingly, I think fair to say, right of center, right wing viewpoint, particularly with the people he's chosen to interview. But the final straw seems to be his interview with the British far right figure, Tommy Robinson. It was put up on his channels before Wing withdrawn. Now the reports are that he is in conversation and Nine Corporation is trying to figure out exactly what to do. What do you make of it?
Well, it's telling when you read the Nine papers, because they are the same company, Nine Entertainment, that owns Channel 9, where Karl has been a star for the best part of 25 years, most notably on the Today Show. And the title of the headline in the Nine papers is Karl Stefanovic to leave Nine after podcast furor. So you can only imagine that that is what's going to happen, that the people internally in Nine want this narrative out there. The similarities between the Kyle Sandilands, I guess furor is a good word, and this one are fairly striking. But it is interesting that Karl obviously was trying to carve a path on his own, separate. You would think that this was potentially an exit strategy at some point. Did he want it to be like this? That is a question that needs to be answered. I mean, his YouTube channel has 122,000 subscribers. He's been doing it since November last year, so that's fair. I mean, if you look in this right-wing online space, it's no doubt it's big business. I mean, you think of Joe Rogan in the US, right? He has 21 million subscribers. So if this is the direction Karl is heading, he's got a long way to go. And I mean, look, we did a story on 7:30 last night. Communications expert Toby Ralph said if he was going to do a podcast that he wanted to be commercially successful, he would be looking for outrageous figures who say outrageous things in outrageous ways. And you can see that's what Karl was going for here. Did he think that this interview with Tommy Robinson would be okay? Did he realise later that he crossed the line? I mean, these are all the questions that people are asking. We can't answer them, obviously, but it'll be interesting to hear from Nine when and if they make an official statement about this.
Yeah, it's just after midday when we're recording this. Obviously, we may well have an announcement pretty soon. So we understand that Karl's contract was due to finish up at the end of this year. there have been rumours for a long time that perhaps Nine was looking to refresh the Today Show, whether or not the big salary that Carl was on was something that they thought was fitted into the current economies of traditional television is, I think, a live question.
And we know that the Today Show has been trailing the Seven Network, and he was on what's being reported, at least if you look it up, is about $2 million annually, so pretty big.
It's a lot of cash in the Australian in the Australian media environment at this point. Yes, I think Joe Rogan, obviously everyone wants to be the next Joe Rogan with all the riches and clout that come from that. But there is also a playbook through people like Tucker Carlson over in the United States or Megyn Kelly, also Piers Morgan. Now, these are people who had previously made their name in traditional media and then had figured out that they could actually have a more lucrative life by basically controlling the medium themselves, controlling the show themselves. It also frees them up from editorial constraints, and it can be very profitable if you are getting some of those big numbers. The issue, I think, for Nine was that this was one of their marquee stars, a person who was very closely affiliated with the brand of Nine and the Today Show in particular. It tries to be, I think, middle of the road. It wants to be a space that attracts a very broad audience, not looking for one side of the political spectrum, whereas what Carl seems to be doing in this new media venture was to be skewing in a particular direction, saying more controversial things, not only asking pointed questions, but also expressing, it seems, his own political views. And that can obviously put offside a large part of the broad middle of Australia. And I think that's where Nine was getting concerned. The question is whether or not the contract that they have with him, if there's any clauses in there that would allow them to end that contract without paying him out, or whether or not they will effectively need to pay him out for the rest of this period and then also take him off air. I do think the comparisons with Carl Sanderlands are interesting because I think on one hand, what many media organisations want are big personalities who have a loyal following because you're trying to stand out in a crowded space, and they are competing not just with other Channel 9's not just competing with Channel 7. They're competing with, for eyeballs, across
YouTube, Netflix, exactly. Podcasts. It's so fragmented.
So all these other people who are saying perhaps more opinionated things or more outrageous things or getting on more outrageous guests, they are competing with that. And so there is obviously an argument among some media executives that what you need is someone who has a strong point of view, and that's how you're going to keep bringing people back to your product. But that doesn't necessarily fit into the traditional media landscape that we've had in Australia for a long time, where you have these kind of big commercial networks competing with only a couple of others. They are now trying to compete in that space. And yes, I think it appears that they gave Carl Stefanovic the opportunity to go and do his own thing while to basically allow him to look at other options. Perhaps they thought that the contract would be coming to an end. But the concern was, well, if this actually becomes such a big story, which it did become, that affects whether or not advertisers are going to want to put their products around Carl Stefanovic when he's on the couch hosting today.
Absolutely. And just to sort of wrap it up, Nine has released a statement in the last 24 hours saying the show is completely independent. Nine has no involvement, which talked to that point about concern about advertisers. And including the guest selection specifically says that and other editorial processes, and says they're taking this matter seriously and, of course, discussing what happens with Carl now.
I do struggle with the concept of should an employee be held responsible for their behaviour outside the task that they're contracted to do. Now, in the sporting space, we have this whole idea of like pulling the sport into disrepute or the competition into disrepute. And that kind of is a catch-all for any footballer who might be caught up in some sort of scandal outside of their usual playing on the pitch or playing on the field. And so in this case, the question is, does brand Carl Stefanovic, is that something that Nine has an interest in, and therefore anything he does in his personal life or other jobs outside whether or not that can be held against him when it comes to his performance in that role. And I think that is just an interesting concept. I don't have a strong opinion necessarily about it, but it is one of those fundamental questions about, well, if you're doing something in your personal or professional life that has nothing to do with your actual job, should your company be able to take action against you for that?
Yeah, that's a big question, Carrington. And I think in the context of Carl, I mean, is he a journalist? Is he an entertainment broadcaster? Yeah. What does the contract say?
Okay, let's switch gears to the economy. It's been a big week for economic data. We had the consumer price index out yesterday, which is giving us an idea of how quickly prices are increasing in Australia today. We have the employment numbers, which gives us an idea of what's happening in the labour market. Now, on one hand, again, the headline figure is pretty positive that we've seen a fall in the unemployment rate, more jobs created in Australia. That's a good thing, I think, for most people. But the sting in the tail might be that if the labour market is performing strongly, it might mean that the Reserve Bank thinks they could potentially hike interest rates further without sending Australia into a dangerous recession.
That's right. I mean, it's a pretty strong read on the labour market. On the headline, the unemployment rate at 4.4%. It was sitting at about 4.1% in January, so it has been edging higher. But there was a read in April of 4.5% that caused a bit of concern. Was it just an anomaly? We've seen the labour market come back with 40,300 jobs, most of them part-time, essentially created in the month, almost reversing the downward revised 40,600 fall in April. So look, it's a fairly reasonable number, and it certainly does keep the chances of an RBA rate hike alive, particularly when you look at the inflation read that we had yesterday, which you and Steph Chalmers talked about at length. So, I mean, the RBA governor, Michelle Bullock, has been very vocal about the next move, if it's to happen, will be a hike. They're worried about inflation expectations running away in the economy. And when the labour market's tight, workers have power to ask for pay rises. And that's where that inflationary, I guess, component comes from in the labour market. Wages rise too much, then they want to sort of loosen it up, I guess, so that they can sort of contain the wage pressures. So that's where the inflation component comes from in the labour market. I mean, we haven't had a huge sort of inflation breakout in terms of wage price spirals. Michelle Bullock has recently ruled that out being a problem. But this does give the RBA scope to raise interest rates. It's not a bad number. And she has, Michelle Bullock has indicated that they might have to give up some of the gains in the labour market in order to get inflation down. The latest forecast from the RBA is that the unemployment rate will rise to about 4.7% by the middle of 2028. So that's a fairly long runway to just edge a little bit higher.
Yeah, I think this would have been a much bigger story if we saw a sizable increase in unemployment. I think that would have had a major impact on expectations about where interest rates are heading. I think you're right. I think what it probably means is that the inflation number remains the key determinant of whether or not the Reserve Bank is going to hike further. Now, before the next meeting, the Reserve Bank will make a decision in August about whether or not to hike interest rates because of the six-week cycle between meetings. That means we'll actually get even more unemployment data and more inflation data before the Reserve Bank makes that decision. So yes, this is important. The monthly figures, they do jump around a lot and they can be quite volatile, which is why people look through to see a trend. And so I think based on what's come through my inbox so far, most people don't seem to have changed their bets about whether or not the Reserve Bank will be hiking or staying put at the next meeting. There's a big focus, obviously, on the big four banks, their chief economist calls about which way interest rates are going. And Westpac is now the outlier in that group because Westpac does believe there's still going to be two hikes. But I will say Westpac is joined in that call by many independent economists and also AMP. And so it is more divided than kind of 3-1 might indicate. Yes, maybe three of the big four think that we're going to be seeing that the Reserve Bank keep on hold. But it is more divided. And I think those next two data points, inflation and unemployment, before the next meeting will be crucial in whether or not the Reserve Bank decides to go in August.
Yeah, it's almost too early to call because we're a fair way away from the 11th of August and anything could happen from here. And the RBA is really data dependent at the moment, as you say. I mean, the economists that I have been speaking to, again, there's two camps. We either stay on hold until the middle of next year, or we get maybe one, maybe two before we start that cutting cycle a little bit later. I'm looking at the market expectations for a rate hike in August, and it's about 20%, similar to where it was yesterday, down slightly. But I think we're going to have to wait and see. I think the only thing we can probably say with certainty at the moment is in the next sort of, you know, 6 to 12 months, if we do see interest rates move, it's probably going to be up, according to the RBA's latest communication. I mean, Andrew Houser, the deputy governor, spoke yesterday and again reiterated that inflation is too high. So it is that tension between the labour market and inflation, their dual mandate. Inflation is winning out every time at the moment.
Yeah, I think that is definitely the focus. Let's switch gears now to artificial intelligence, which I know you've also been looking into at the business. So we got this warning from APRA. So APRA is the regulator, the prudential regulator of the banking sector, insurance. Part of what they do is make sure that when it comes to, say, banks, that deposits are looked after, that that money is safe and that people know that that money is going to be there when they want to withdraw it. But they are obviously very focused also on the security of the financial system. And what was made clear by this speech from APRA member Therese McCarthy-Hockey was that AI is the big risk they currently see in the financial system. And I've been pretty obsessed with this Mythos 5 story. And first of all, the first reports we had about it was that it was so powerful and so adept at finding flaws in operating systems, in different software, that it was too dangerous to release to the public. And so there was this kind of staggered rollout, first in the United States to companies that they thought were most at risk and also that were systemically important, so big financial institutions, software companies.
And that was under the codename Glasswing Project, right?
Exactly, yeah. And so the idea was to allow them to basically use this tool to go and check what their vulnerabilities were, so that they could patch them or work out ways to mitigate the risk before it was released to the public. It started with the US. It was then supposed to be rolled out to other countries. Donald Trump, the US president, comes into play and says, we don't want foreign nationals having access to either Mythos or to Fable 5, which was kind of a slightly downgraded
version.
Exactly, yeah. Which wasn't supposed to have the same capabilities, but there was concerns that actually it could be jailbroken and jailbreaked and then would allow you to have those capabilities. So anyway, it's been a very complicated mess. What she's saying is this is concerning for Australia and actually does raise the real question about, are we not only vulnerable to artificial intelligence potentially finding these vulnerabilities and being used by a bad actor to potentially catastrophic end when it comes to our financial system, but also are we too vulnerable on other countries deciding whether or not we do have access to these type of tools?
Yeah, absolutely. And if we don't have access to these types of tools, then we can't, as she was sort of saying, fight fire with fire because we don't have the advanced capabilities that other countries may have. I mean, this idea of Team Australia goes to the heart of sovereign AI. It's not just security. It's about having our own capabilities. And of course, Australia probably can't compete with the likes of Anthropic or OpenAI. We're just not big enough. We don't have a Silicon Valley here that's as large, you know. But we do need to make sure in sort of the way that APRA was framing it, that we have that interconnectivity in the same way that perhaps we're sort of dealing with cybersecurity. We have this sort of institutions are talking to each other about AI capability. And if we don't do that, then it increases the vulnerability. I mean, I am talking to Stacey Pence, who's the managing director for AI from Accenture this afternoon on the business. We're going to be talking about the need for the sovereign AI, I guess, capabilities in Australia to be really talked about and looked at. And it's not just regulation, but it's actually access and capability as well. So she's got a view on that. So we'll delve into this issue more deeply. But it is really fascinating because we're only at the very start. And as Therese McCarthy-Hockey was saying, sort of the technological evolutions are now happening exponentially. So yeah. It's sort of weeks and days, not even months and years now as to how fast things are changing.
Yes, and what part of what that Team Australian expression is supposed to go to is that some of the bigger institutions, say the big four banks, they might have the resources available to have dedicated teams to be looking at artificial intelligence patching these type of holes, but maybe some of the smaller institutions don't have it. And what APRA doesn't want to happen is for the big institutions to look after themselves and start to see this as some sort of a competitive advantage. She says the financial system is so interlocked that if you have a security flaw in one of these smaller institutions, then that is not only bad news for them, that could also be catastrophic news for bigger institutions. So it's not just altruism that they should be helping smaller players, but that actually it helps protect them as well as protecting the whole country. I think that it does get difficult though, right? Because you have this is a capitalist system where huge amounts of money are being pumped by these corporations into their own IT systems, into their own AI systems. And knowing when you should be sharing information, I think, is difficult. And it looks like APRA is already looking, for example, at partnering with Treasury, the Signals Directorate, different functions of government to have a kind of regulatory but also helping pass through information role. But that is going to be critical. And yes, Australia is not going to suddenly, you know, develop a competitor with Anthropic or with OpenAI. We just do not have that capability. But I think there is a live question about, do you start trying to work more with the European Union as they also grapple with this issue? They're also very aware that they're very reliant on US tech. We have a Trump administration that has been willing to cut partners off, even countries that are very close allies, from this cutting-edge technology. I think that really would have worried people, and just recognizing how vulnerable you are. Now, does that mean you're suddenly going to go and decide to use artificial intelligence from China? Probably not. There are other safety concerns there, but it probably does mean that you're trying to at least figure out ways to have perhaps those American companies hosted in your country as well, so that you've got different ways of interacting with them. But it is complicated, and it is, I think it is a genuine concern. We know most of our financial system is digital now, right? And so any flaw that potentially, you know, even when you just have an ATM interruption, it can be devastating for small businesses, right, for a short period. But imagine someone actually getting access to these banks, the deep systems, that could obviously be catastrophic.
Well, that's right. The greater the sophistication of the technology, the greater the risks. And that's what Australia has to work with now. And that interconnectivity piece that you're talking about, the banks already communicate when it comes to scams and to things like that. So there is that sort of framework of sharing data there. Yeah. But this race to the top of AI, you can see how that could create winners and losers very easily if the regulators don't get involved.
Yeah, fascinating. And Alicia, we have mentioned the business a couple of times in this chat. Remind me, where can people find it if they want to have a listen or watch?
You can find the business on the ABC News channel at 8:45 Eastern Standard Time, and you can watch it anytime on iView.
That is it for today's episode of ABC Business Daily. Tomorrow, be sure to catch That's Business with Alan Kohler, who will be sitting down with Andreas Foras, CEO of 4D Medical. It's currently one of the most closely watched healthcare companies on the ASX that has turned the heads of investors and hospitals alike. And I'll be back in your feeds on Monday. Remember to never miss an episode. Make sure you're following ABC Business Daily on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send in a question, you can email abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. Catch you next time, Alicia.
Thanks for having me, Carrington.